Great to see Pam here. Don't know, Pam is the sort of replacement poster girl of the day. Now on her second, she just wishes she was a quadruped so she'd have more done. that's really great. Just before we start, there's always a couple of things that I have to say, but there are some things that there are quite a lot of things that happen in Day Spring that you don't notice, the hidden work that goes on, and there are all of four seats for you to choose from. You can just sit at the back, but then I'll think if you sit in the back, I'll think you were sent there for some purpose. And just over the past few weeks, on and off, Paul and Nigel have been working away at setting up another storeroom for us. We really, really do appreciate the effort that goes into those things, in a huge amount of planning beforehand, and then a lot of detail work in putting things together in a way which saves us serious money. What's happening, by the way, is that stuff that's been outside we're bringing inside, which is better, apart from the fact that those wretched tables, they're wonderful tables really, because they do so much for us, it means there's less of a distance for them to move, and that's always good. Gradually we get these things done, but Paul and Nigel, we don't see it very much, but we do understand that God evaluates things not on the basis of whether people get noticed, but very often whether they don't. So we'll do our best not to notice you, so in order to maximise recognition from the Lord. But thank you very much for that. And there's something else. Andy's sharing the talk with me today, and this is the first opportunity I've had to say this since it happened. The weekend where we launched Cabaret with all sorts of guests, stakeholder guests and regular guests at Cabaret, went past in rather a blur. It went past in a particular blur for Andy, who was really cooking on gas that weekend. And I just wanted to, he probably still hasn't recovered from it yet, but I just wanted to recognise that David Sandberg and I had a little conversation where we thought, why don't we tie together Cabaret and bus launch? When should we do this? In about 3.5 weeks' time. Let's suggest this to Andy and see what he thinks. And Andy said yes. And then, of course, had to deliver the whole thing. I sat while I was on holiday and listened to the talk summary of what was going on that night. And it's a really great testimony to what God has done and what we're looking forward to God doing. Every time I spend time thinking about the missional ministry of Open Blue these days, I find myself stirred to go back to the beginning of the vision and to look to God about that. Now, the weekend of the big snow, we were due to talk to you a bit about the last phrase in our repositioned mission statement, and we have deferred that for a couple of weeks when we've got everybody together. So in 2 weeks' time, Marion, Carol, David, Andy, myself, will all be chipping into that. One person who could have done, I thought six up was just a bit too much, would have been Rosie as well, because in terms of shaping the change in our understanding and mission over the last 10 years, Rosie's made a significant contribution to that as well, and no doubt if I asked her what it was, she wouldn't be able to remember. Yeah. We're looking forward to doing that. I think that's really quite important in just pushing things forward a little bit. But today, and my contribution in the main throughout the summer is going to be about some things which are primarily internal with practical implications. And today, I want us to just step back to the only bit of the church year that seems to make sense to me, and that's Easter. Because of the structure of services, we never do much around Good Friday. Although some of us were at the ecumenical events in the towns, and some of us were actually talking about Easter hymns and Good Friday hymns and the hymns that make sense to us and the hymns that don't fit very well. But I think there's something about Easter. It's partly because you haven't got all this pile of tinsel and holly and presents and all that stuff on top of it. People do their best to turn the crown of thorns into a flower arrangement, which seems to be really strange, that you would take something that would look like a weapon or an instrument of torture and then add flowers to it to make it look nice. Doesn't really seem to be quite where it's at. But then you get to Easter Day and you've got those stark, stark images, particularly the stone that's rolled away from the door. And so we're going to start there, and we're going to spend a little time looking at three stories. But before we do that, let's pray. Let's ask Father, Son, Holy Spirit to be present with us and to be powerfully present as well. So, Father, by your Spirit, through the power of your Son, you have made Easter come alive for us. And Lord, we're aware of the fact that at times we sort of give ourselves the impression that we're waiting for something more to happen rather than live in the life of those who are in the Easter moment. Lord, I pray this morning that you would work on us to increase a sense of thankfulness that brings out greater life and assurance that the good stuff is still happening and is still coming. Amen. Okay, here's the starting point. Have you ever been in a situation where you should have recognised somebody but have not been able to do so? Yeah? Tell us about it. When's the last time it happened for you? When?
Do you want us to tell us?
Yeah, tell us.
When I was on maternity leave with John, we had a new receptionist. I went in and said, oh, hello, and this sort of thing. Our old sections are still there as well. And we were talking, and you know, introductions just when John was a baby in arms. And suddenly, Julie said to this new lady, this new beautiful young lady, Shannon, have you done a such a... And I went, oh, it's Shannon! It was her daughter, who I'd seen pictures of growing up. I'd known her for years, who occasionally I'd met her. But suddenly, here she was, a young lady rather than a child. And it was like, oh! And it was suddenly, I recognised her. Oh, it's Shannon!
Yeah, that's quite a thing, isn't it, when it happens suddenly. Anybody else have that sort of sudden moment of recognition, where you recognise somebody you should have...
I had one a long time ago. I used to help out on youth camps, and one of the kids who'd been in the tent I was in for a whole week, and I'd been looking after and talking with and spending time with for a week, I saw him a week later, and he was in school uniform, and I didn't recognise him.
Yeah.
He came up and said hello to me.
Yeah.
Who knew that?
Different context, different places. One of the things, on the rare occasions I go back to the church I served in during my 30s, I was responsible for children's and youth work there. And I have the experience of people who are now in their 30s and 40s coming up to me and saying hello, expecting me to recognise them. Now, I don't feel guilty about that because, it's been a long time. Some of them, the last time I saw them was when I dedicated them or conducted their parents' weddings or occasionally there'd be a clue in the name, you know, that it will fit together. But it does come home even closer than that because regularly... we didn't do it this year, but regularly we go to see something called the Gym and Dance Show at Swindon Academy, in which one of our daughters takes part.
Granddaughters.
There you go. I spend a lot of my life mixed up. I rarely mix up the boys and the girls, but I have a granddaughter called Sarah Emma. And 50% of the time I get the right name first, yeah? The thing is that people who do GCSE dance tend to be willowy and they tend to have hair down to their waist anyway. And if you've got 40 of these kids on stage, your chances of working out which one is your granddaughter, particularly if you're looking for your daughter, who's now 40-odd, is going to be right problematic. And so that's really difficult. But it goes on even further because anywhere where you've got people in uniform, like Richard said, it's really quite difficult. You see somebody in a different context. Our Toby plays... plays lacrosse, and you've got these mud-covered thugs who are helmeted and padded, and the rain is coming down, and your chances of picking out who it is are really very difficult unless you know the numbers. And in fact, we only discovered who Toby was when you saw him with his head down, got walking across the field, when the referee had said, "Toby, sin bin." they got rather too close to somebody's head with a stick, I think, or something like that. And you just realise there's something about the face of this young person who's spitting his mouth guard out and sort of making his way across to the place where he is. So actually, we shouldn't do too much blaming about failure to recognise. We know the story from the back. They only experienced it from the front. And of course, this is the problem that you face, guys, as well, in every day. It would be so much easier if we could live our life backwards. You know, if we could start from the end, and then we could come back and we could say, oh, that's how God was working things together for good. That's how it was all working out. That's how, in the end, it all made sense. That is why the troubles that we had then, because of the glory that we're experiencing now, really doesn't seem to matter. But we don't have that. So, here we go. We've got three stories about people who didn't recognize things. We were going to show these on video, but for a variety of reasons, we're not this morning. Now, Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this, she turned round and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realise that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you're looking for?" thinking he was the gardener. She said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned towards him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to him, "Hold on to me, for I've not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them I'm ascending to my Father and to your Father, to my God and to your God." If you're like me, you've probably heard quite a lot of talks about that verse 17, and nobody really knows what it means, and there are lots of opinions about it, but let's concentrate with the easy bit at the moment. How is it that we recognise Jesus when he speaks to us? You see, the problem for Mary was that she was full of grief, and we're going to come to this again as we listen to the other stories as well. She was full of bewilderment. She was full of disappointment as well, and each of those things were interacting. She didn't know how to put them together. And in quite a lot of our life, we find ourselves disappointed because of the way things have turned out. We find ourselves bewildered because we thought we understood how they were going to fit together. We thought we understood what the Bible was saying and how God did his work. And an awful lot of the times we find ourselves grieved. We're sad because of the way things worked out. There are people who we really, really thought would be great mentors for us and for our children. There are people who we thought understood what it was all about better than we did. And we find ourselves thinking, how could that have happened? And of course, when you are in that position, you're not in a good place to recognise anything. Now, just have a little think about that. I'm not sure that I could even frame a question for you, but you might be able to work out where the question would be. Is if you were to think about how receptive you would be to Jesus coming up beside you and speaking to you this morning, how would you rate that? Would you be more receptive than you've ever been in your life? Would you say you'd be less receptive than you've ever been in your life? Okay. Most of us would say, well, no, neither of those. But then let's try and get a continuum and say, how would you scale it at the moment? And of course, not only where would you place that, but why would you place it there? What's going on at the moment that would make it easier or more difficult? If you separate it out, I'm just getting going now, Andy, so I'm going to stop because I can just begin to see a grid appearing before me. If, in fact, you looked on those scales and you got three scales, one of grief and one of bewilderment, if you like understanding, if you put it positively, and one of disappointment. What's the opposite of disappointment? Really hard, isn't it? We're only used to being disappointed. Yeah? But, no, because it's got to be realisation in that, isn't there? Is it realisation? Sorry? Joy, fulfilment, yeah. Fulfilment, yeah. So if you disappointment, fulfilment, bewilderment, understanding, grief and joy. Yeah, that would be it. So you look along those scales and start to figure that out. Now, if you can hold all that in your mind, when you get home, try and sort that out. I'll sit here with my pencil while Andy's talking and I'm going to try and work on the scale for myself, because how did it happen and how was it possible that for Mary it all turned on a sixpence? Sorry, that's sort of really damning with faint praise. Well, it's not, but you know what I mean. It suddenly turned round. Because what happened when she heard Jesus' voice. Okay, Andy, tell us another story, yeah? Yeah, you do need this, don't you? You got it?
Yep. I'll do. All right, so I'm looking at the what's called the Walk to Emmaus. I was really getting into Dave's talk there. I was just sort of going, oh, crumbs. I was just trying to think how is God going to move with us this morning, really? So just before he started, I just thought, there are three elements in the room for me this morning, and I was trying to organise them. So there was me, and there was you, and then I thought, oh, where's God fit? No, he's the third element. Then I thought, actually, he's probably not the third element, he's the first one. And so am I second or am I third? And this is the rest, you know. But the thing is that the reality of that is that something's got to happen. If we're really talking sense and real today, there's got to be a third element in what's going on in this room, which is God's Spirit moving on us and speaking to us and challenging us and something. So, and I find this story about the walk to Emmaus. So these two guys who are disciples who have walked with Jesus and seen him killed on the cross and have heard the women. I've seen a lot on Twitter, by the way, about it's the women who discovered that Jesus rose from the dead, and the guys caught on a bit later, only when they saw it with their own eyes. They didn't believe them, which is obviously typical of us guys, isn't it? And wrong. But that's the way it happened. These two guys, still having heard that news, still are on their way to Emmaus. And I haven't quite worked out why, because it doesn't really tell you. But we're going to have a little look at that. So I'll just read the story very quickly so that you can just picture it more in your mind. So on that same day, two of Jesus' followers were going to a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking to each other about all the things that had happened. And as they talked and discussed, Jesus himself drew near and walked along with them. And they saw him, but somehow they did not recognize him. And Jesus said to them, "What are you talking about to each other as you walk along?" Now, if you were here last week, by the way, there was a video, and it showed two guys walking along on this, you know, sort of desert type road, nobody else in sight whatsoever. And then the third guy sort of comes along. And just a little question is that the story is obviously sort of a summarization of the whole thing. So, but didn't include how many other people were on the road. It's just something that's not in the story. So you can't say there was anybody else on the road, but it also doesn't say that there weren't. And it was a road, it's only a 7 mile road from Jerusalem to Emmaus. So there must have been a few other people. So that might have been the thing. Anyway, we'll come to that a bit later. Jesus said to them, "What are you talking about to each other as you walk along?" And they stood still with sad faces, and one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only visitor in Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have been happening these past few days?" "What things?" he asked, as if he didn't know. "The things that happened to Jesus of Nazareth," they answered. "This man was a prophet and was considered by God and by all the people to be powerful in everything he said and did. Our chief priests and rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and he was crucified. And we had hoped that he would be the one who was going to set Israel free. Besides all that, this is now the third day since it happened. Some of the women of our group surprised us when they went at dawn to the tomb but could not find his body. They came back saying they had seen a vision of angels who had told them that he is alive. Some of our group went to the tomb and found it exactly as the women had said, but they did not see him or believe them by the sound of it." But that's not in the story. Then Jesus said to them, "How foolish you are, how slow you are to believe everything the prophets said. Was it not necessary for the Messiah to suffer these things and then to enter his glory?" And Jesus explained to them what was said about himself in all the scriptures, beginning with the books of Moses and the writings of all the prophets. As they came near to the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he was going further. But they held him back, saying, "Stay with us, the day's almost over, it's getting dark." So he went in with them, and he sat down to eat with them and took bread and said the blessing. And then he broke bread and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, but he disappeared from their sight. They said to each other, wasn't it like a fire burning in us when he talked to us on the road and explained the scriptures to us? They got up at once and went back to Jerusalem, where they found the 11 disciples fast asleep because it was so late at... No, sorry, that's not in there. But it was dark. They got a seven-mile journey. I think it's a seven-mile journey back. It might have only been 3.5. I don't know, because you're not quite sure where they've had the meal. But at least it's an hour or two. And after dark, you're not going to use all your oil up on the lights, are you? So, sorry, that's just another aside. So they gathered together and they're saying, the Lord is risen indeed. He has appeared to Simon. Then the two explained to them what had happened on the road and how they'd recognized the Lord when he had broken bread. So this is why one of the things Dave's talked about, recognizing people and not recognizing people. And I think that when my father passed away about just over seven years ago, I began, and I still do, actually, when I'm walking down the street, there's sometimes a guy who wears a jacket like my dad used to wear and is about the same sort of stature. And I think, oh, he looks like my dad. And he reminds me of my dad. And it makes me think of him. So, but closer to the time when he died, I can remember having a very, very vivid dream about him sitting in an armchair and me coming into the room or something and whatever. And I know that other people, because I then shared that with one or two people, you start to talk about this and you begin to find that actually it's not unusual for people who've known somebody really closely to actually even talk about ghosts or apparitions of the same person or somehow they're communicating or whatever. So I'm just putting the other side of the argument, if you like, because in some respects you've got a heightened sense of, you're missing the person and you might be looking out for some sort of connection with them. So I don't know. I mean, it's stunning, I think, that they do not recognize him. I just think it's out of the ordinary in a way, because if there were just the two of them and there's him, there's no one else, what's actually going on there? Well, if there was a bit of a likeness, surely they'd have gone, I've seen you somewhere before. They'd be saying it to themselves, I've seen you somewhere before, I don't know. He's talking, okay, well, we'll bother about it. You know what I mean? You'd just be going, oh, yeah. Like the other thing that when Dave was talking, the thing that I can't think of times when I've not recognized somebody that I should have done, but the number of times I can't remember their name, it happened to me this morning, so with somebody. So I had to ask Philippa, who was that? What's his name? You sort of get into that sort of zone. So I do think it's quite strange that they don't recognize him, but there's this little thing that maybe is just working along as they're going along. Then he starts to explain stuff to them and he starts to say things, and there must have been some little connections about his phrases, maybe the way he explained stuff and stuff like that, that begins, as they say, the fire was sort of, it's burning inside them, something's happening, and they get closer and closer to, the meal, because they obviously, they felt some sort of connection, because they wouldn't have said, stay with us. So there's a bit of a connection, stay with us, okay, I'll stay, have some food. And then finally, he probably had some way of breaking the bread. I've seen that on one of the DVDs we've got when we've shown the teens, where, very often, different people break bread in ways. Some people tear it, don't they? Some people go like this, some people hold it up, Some people bake it into bits, like feeding the birds or whatever. He'd have had a particular way of doing it, maybe, or he did it in a particular way that they would recognize. And so, bang, suddenly it happens. I've got a bit of a concept about this whole story, though, which is like this. Why were they walking from Jerusalem off to Emmaus? Were they going home? Were they returning to their former lives? Was it they were just taking a weekend break away from the group and grief, to try and get away from all that, stuff like that? Or were they giving up? Were they just giving up on the whole project because they were disappointed and just wandering off? Hope had gone, They actually explain it to this stranger straight away. Oh, don't you know, it's all like this, and we thought he was going to do this, and he hasn't done that, so they are pretty much... And I was struck by this, I've thought about this like this, because Jesus says something which he only seems to say to the disciples, "You are foolish. You have little faith." And then he starts to explain stuff. And it's sort of like, come on, guys. You know, it's not like that, it's like this. And I feel like it doesn't happen this quickly for me to get disappointed and the effects of disappointment. It gradually eats away and slowly changes you, so that instead of going on the track and being in the group and dealing with the difficulty and the grief and stuff like that and being in the team and saying, okay, you know, God's doing something, you get a little bit disappointed, a little bit discontented, you're just not really very happy about the whole thing, it's very difficult. It would be much easier to leave. They don't need me, I don't need them, let's go back to what I knew because it's safer. And I feel I've been doing that the last few years in certain sorts of parts of my life, and gradually moving off and going down this way. And so if Jesus doesn't somehow, the whole thing about Emmaus, the story on Emmaus Road, is that Jesus comes and rescues these two guys, and, well, he doesn't rescue them really, he sort of goes with them, walks with them a bit, but the whole episode is about turning them round to get them to walk back again, to get in back in with the team, and to actually be part of the project still. And I just wonder whether we can fit ourselves into that sort of position, really. Marion gave this word this morning, which I thought was a really good bit. She was saying, she said, how big is your imagination, your dreams? Can I, and then she's saying, God can do immeasurably more than those. Reach out and receive from me to be able to let me be able to give you what I've got to give you for you, for your work to do. But don't be content with where you are. And I think these guys weren't content with where they were. Things had got too hard. I know what that's like. I'm sure you do. And they were doing the wrong thing, heading off. So it's not about being disappointed, discontented. It's about not being content with just staying where we are, but actually being able to continue with the project. I think that's what Marion's calling us into this morning. Does that make sense? I hope it sort of makes sense. I don't know, I think I've got to the end of the story there, eh?
Nigel, could you do something for me that I never attempt to do myself? Stand that thing up on its legs for cricket time.
Yeah. The. We spent a load of time trying to work out which was the best foldable flip chart stand. And we came to the conclusion there isn't a good one that's foldable. The only good ones are ones that stay up permanently. Do you need a committee to help? Well, why don't you do it out of view, just in case you manage to cut a finger off, which... yeah. And it was really interesting that Andy had concentrated particularly on the issue of disappointment. Because that's a real weirdness about that story, isn't it? In a way, if you can think of the half-light of the garden and the grief that Mary was experiencing, the fact that she was in tears and she couldn't see properly anyway, that seems to make more sense. But if you walk along with somebody for an hour or two, okay, I think a Sabbath day's journey was 7 or 8 miles. It was around about that time. And I don't know either whether you could go both ways or just one. Surely in that amount of time, as Jesus must have used his own catchphrases and must have had some sort of something going on for the guys, it really is strange. But then... inevitably, once you start talking like that, you're saying, well, if I'd been there, I would have recognised him. I would have known what was going on. I wouldn't have found it that difficult. But let's try and organise the data a bit, if we can. If you'll excuse me. Oh.
we will eventually find a pen. Yep. Here we've got a number of cases here, and we've got three sets of conditions. Let me have a column at the end because I'm bound to think of something else to come along. Yeah. So here's the conditions. Let's express these conditions as negatives, as being sorrow, as being bewilderment, and disappointment. Okay. And the cases are Mary. And then we've got Cleopas plus one. And then we've got this gang of others who we're going to have a look at in John in a moment. Peter and co, fishermen at large. So Mary, she probably hadn't even got into the issue of bewilderment. Of course she was bewildered, but she was bewildered at a very surface level. What was going on there was grief. That was high. Yeah. Andy is reading into the story of Cleopas one, grief and bewilderment and disappointment. They talked a lot about understanding. That's certainly high. We've got no evidence on the grief one. We've got some on the disappointment thing, because what was happening is they were walking away from where it was all going on. Yeah? It had all been going on. Whatever had happened, the rushing around, they knew enough to know that something was there. Was difficult. And then we get these guys at the end. This is really interesting because something very different, something more advanced has happened here. Peter said, I'm going to go fishing. The twin, Thomas, the one who had actually had opportunity to examine the wounds in Jesus' hands and his side, right? The one who really put himself out there as being sceptical. He said, I'm coming fishing too. Nathaniel said, I'm coming fishing. And then the two disciples who are never mentioned by name in the Gospel of John, James and John, they said, we're coming fishing as well. Do you know what I'm left thinking about that? Where was Peter's brother Andrew? What had he said? You know, I'm not going back to the business. You see, I can't help but think under those circumstances, the way disappointment showed for these guys, it was a numbers game. Because they were blokes, that was the way they thought. I started off by saying, it's taken me a long time to try and not think too much about the people who are not in a meeting on a Sunday morning. Because for ministers, most of the time, it's a numbers game. And you're either looking for converts, or you're looking for attendance, or you're looking for income, or you're looking for the size of youth work, or you're looking for some great story to tell. It's all about numbers, if you're not very careful. And while we know it oughtn't be like that, it gets to be like that. But for these guys, when Jesus died, the money disappeared. Have you thought about that? You know, they had a common purse. They had money that had to be looked after. When it came round to tax bill time, Jesus was the one who did the miracles and put the money there. So the only solution for these guys was, got to get a job. And we've had some really bad times with Open Blue and with the church. We've inevitably gone back to say, well, what can we do? Andy wouldn't fancy going back much to teaching. Yeah. I've reached the point in life when I could probably just about get a job at B&Q. Don't mock it. I think I will probably know more about screws than some of the Burks that work in there anyway. But, you know, some bits of the job, yeah, I'd really enjoy fiddling around all day long with those things. But, you know, you think about what sort of, what kind of jobs are, as long as I didn't have to do any square cutting with a saw, but that's another story entirely. So they've got to go and find a job. So they go and find a job. And as you do, when you go back to something you've done before, you find it difficult. And like fishermen did, there's a lot of evidence. Apparently even Aristotle says that people used to go fishing at night then. So it's not just these days that it happens. They went out at night fishing. And there they go. They've caught nothing all night long. It's just confirmed how miserable they were. Confirmed how much of their life they've wasted hooking up with Jesus because he didn't do what he said he did. Even though he claims to have come back from the dead and they've seen him, it must have been a ghost because this just is not working out. And then sort of just imagine what sort of a muddle they're in with their bewilderment and their grief, all getting mixed up with their disappointment as well. And then somebody shouts out, and when you're on a pier and you're going to buy some people who are fishing, are you one of those people who feels it necessary to talk to them and ask them how well they've done? I never do it because I always think if I was in their position that I wouldn't wish to be asked whether I'd caught anything, because if I'd caught anything that was a sort of whale or worth having, it would be laying there on the so that everybody could see it. And going up and saying, what are you catching? The answer is nothing. You know, what are you fishing for? Fish. Somebody shouts out from the bank, how are you doing? You caught anything? And they shout back, no. Perhaps it's a different culture to ours where you could do that kind of thing. We don't know how far they were out, how big the net was or whatever. And then this voice says back, put your net in on the other side. Now, possibly somewhere in their memory, because this had all happened before, hadn't it? It happened right at the beginning of the story. It happened in Luke chapter 5. This whole thing had happened before. And God was doing it again. But that's my punchline. Let's get to the punchline in a minute. They put the net out and they pulled it in and it was full of very big fishes. They counted them afterwards as well. They needed to count them because they had to do a share out of the catch, didn't they? There was money to be made there, 153 fishes, which we know was an over-the-top load because it said the amazing thing was that the net never broke. So here's the thing, and I'm sure you ask these questions as well. What happens when this occurs is that John, the unnamed disciple, says, it's the Lord. Wow. Peter, who's been fishing in his underpants, puts his coat on, leaps into the water, and swims or staggers to the shore. Quite interesting there that the response to Jesus was pretty formal, just as in the same way as you got it on the part of Mary. She doesn't say Jesus, she doesn't even say Lord, she says teacher when she sees him. And Peter puts his coat back on so he can do a formal greeting, even though he's going to have seaweed dripping off him when he does so. And he goes to find Jesus by the bank, and Jesus says, right, have you got any fish? Bring some of your fish. Because Jesus had got enough bread for them, unless they were having a very low-carb meal, I guess, But he'd only got some fish on the go. And I can't help but wonder where those fish came from. Because in a world where miracles happen, then everything is possible. And God doesn't need to repeat himself. God never needs to do the same thing again. Yeah? He can do it a different way each time. But there he was, doing it again. So here we were. For Mary, the thing that made the difference was that Jesus spoke her name. And as I prepped this over the past 4 weeks or so, I've been thinking, I would really like that to happen one day, to hear Jesus call my name. Don't know whether he called Dave or David. He called David, I think I was going to be told off, but there you go, that's the way it is. I would so love it for that to happen. But I do know this, guys. I do know that even if I haven't heard him call my name, he knows my name. And he can identify Steve Romain out of all the Steves in the world. And out of all the Romains in the world, he knows what matters to Steve. And it is true that as Steve draws near to him, then God draws near to us. Holy Spirit, the Lord Jesus draws near to us. And then what was the conditions that came? I don't know whether it was in the breaking of bread or in the conversation, but whatever it was a whole new level of understanding. So we've got joy going on here. We've got joy. We've got knowing. And we've got fulfillment. I'm sure there are loads of other Easter moments that could occur. But just concentrate, don't be greedy, guys, let's just concentrate on these three. On joy, understanding, and fulfillment. Where would it be great to move ahead in an Easter moment with the Lord for you at the moment? Is there something of sorrow that you need to deal with that would make a difference? Is there something that you'd really like to understand or to know? Is there somewhere where you've been disappointed and you're waiting for fulfillment? I have to say that with all of these, it's a percentage business. Because until that which is perfect is come, that which is perfect has not come. You know, that's the way it is. But there's still more to be there. And I think that's really where we are. I'm going to get us to take a moment or two of quietness, and we'll see whether there are particular things we should reflect on. And Andy, if you've got anything that we should bring in, and we'll spend 2 or 3 minutes praying for people. That's okay. Yeah.
This is what I'm doing now before you have
right, to yeah. Okay. We were going to have a quiet time. Let's just pray, guys. Yeah. We're just starting from the fact, Lord, that there's so much here for us. We're starting from the fact that essentially following is about relationship rather than reading the textbook. And we're coming to you this morning saying, we've lived the way we've lived, we've done the best we can, we've got to where we are, and we would like so much more. So much more closer. So much more tightly connected with Father, Son, and Spirit. And so we ask you to come and touch us now, to speak to us, to whether using the grid or using some other way, you help us identify where we need that Easter morning moment, moment of revelation and connection with yourself.
When I get to moments like this, I say I'd like to let myself really fully fall into your arms, God, into your ways, and to follow you. And then there's a but, because. And I always find myself thinking that while I couldn't keep it up, or there'd be other reasons, usually linked to guilt and all of that sort of stuff, that I can't really do that, or I don't want to do it, or whatever. But I've found over the years that Jesus isn't really bothered about that bit of things. He's not worried about whether I can keep it up or not. He's not worried about whether I really do want to do the thing or not, because I'm actually obviously wanting to do it in one sense, but just struggling. He's not worried about that. He always releases me into more than I would ever imagine for myself. He always gives me greater space to move, to think through things and work things through and make mistakes or not. He's always gracious in that way. And yet I still can't quite get out of my head the opposite view at times like this. So, Father, if there's any prayer I want to pray for me and for others here this morning, it's really just help us to be able to let us follow you, to decide in the very heart of our hearts that, yeah, we do want to actually continue or start a relationship with you where we just chat to you and talk things through with you, and you talk to us and you help us with everyday stuff and all our worries and our anxieties.
Father, I pray that over these next few days that you will make us aware of where the issue lies, so that we're able to articulate it to you and possibly to one another as well, where our sadness, our bewilderment, our frustration, our disappointment is, so that we can look to you for that moment of new life that enables us to go on to receive the Spirit as the next thing. Amen. Okay, guys, that's it. I will finish now writing the words in there. Next week, it's Dave Day speaking, and the following Sunday, we're doing this continuation, completion of the mission stuff. Thank you for being here. That's it.